Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, Larry Mueller here. Glad you're with us today as we spend our time talking about native plants and landscaping with those native plants. Molly Fifield-Murray, our guest today, she directs outreach and education programs for the UW-Madison Arboretum. Really pleased to have her with us. I'm going to have her talk about the Arboretum a little bit, too. It's kind of an extension of the UW-Madison, or it is, I should say. And it's used by students and researchers and local citizens as well. So it's a fun place to visit, and we'll talk about that. But we'll also be answering, of course, your questions on native plants and landscaping with them as we visit with Molly. If you want to join in, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. Molly, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
It's great to be here, although it's an awfully nice day to be inside.
I know. We should be over at the Arboretum.
That's right. On location.
Give us a little of the background of the Arboretum. It's what? Over 1,000 acres, if I'm not mistaken.
It's 1,200 acres. 60 acres of that is a typical Arboretum with woody tree plant collection of lilacs, crab apples, and elms and oaks and all those things. Quite spectacular right now with the crab apples and lilacs in bloom. The rest of the 1,200 acres are ecosystems, some restored, some natural.
And it's a place for UW researchers and their students to conduct research and...
That's right. Well, the first research was, how do you plant a prairie? Because no one had ever done that in 1934. And research right now is looking at one of the things is invasive species, such as reed canary grass. How do you get rid of it? What's the best methods for restoring an ecosystem that's been damaged by some of the invasives that are problems for everybody in the state?
And, you know, Renee and I and Emily were at the Arboretum two nights ago, or two, you know, late afternoons after work. And you mentioned the lilacs and the flowering crabs and so forth. And they're spectacular right now. We're, in fact, going back again this afternoon, later afternoon, when my mother-in-law and father-in-law come to visit. We've got to get them over there. The fragrances are absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a tough place to work, but somebody has to do it. Yes, the gardens right now are quite spectacular, as are the woodlands. The woodland wildflowers are, some of the early ones have finished, but the other ones, blue wood phlox and trillium and things are in bloom right now. So it's a very busy time there, lots of visitors. Sunday we have Badger Trolley there, so for people who don't want to walk around the whole place, can take a 45-minute ride at 1, 2, or 3 o'clock. And
oh, what a wonderful way to celebrate Mother's Day. And Mother's Day is a pretty popular time over there, I would guess.
Yes, it is. It just happens to be lilac time. And, of course, with the funny spring weather we've had this year, the crab apples and lilacs are in bloom at the same time. There are even still some magnolias in bloom. So usually that's stretched out a little bit. And lilacs will be in bloom for a few more weeks yet, but it's quite spectacular.
It's the time to come.
Right.
And it is for a lot of people who were there. I think I spied Ed Hasselkus leading a little group of people night that I was that Renee and I were and Emily were over there.
Well, Wednesday nights we have garden walks through June, and so those start at 7 o'clock at the visitor center, and that one happened to be on crab apples. The one this coming Wednesday is on lilacs.
So, and no charge for that?
Nope, they're free.
They're free. Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what, let's talk about native plants for the landscape. You and your husband have a property, and you have native plants on your own property?
Oh, we do. We've restored prairies. We have a natural wetland. We live out in the western part of Dane County, so we're in the driftless area. So we have about a 40-foot rocky cliff, which has some northern wildflowers on it naturally, and quite a diverse area. It wasn't a very good farm, but it's a nice place to have native plants.
Oh, give us a call if you have a question for Molly as we talk native plants with her at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Did want to mention the new book that's out called Prairie Plants. It is a new book, if
that's
I'm not
right.
mistaken. Prairie Plants of the UW-Madison Arboretum. and some spectacular photography and descriptions of so many plants that are not only in the Madison Arboretum, UW-Madison Arboretum, but are found around Wisconsin.
There's over 350 plants in the book. And, of course, the Arboretum has numerous prairie restorations, and they aren't all plants that were just in Dane County. Some of them, like phlox, smooth phlox, came from the Racine area, and some of them came from western Wisconsin. So it's a good representation of prairie plants in the state.
And we can, and it's published by the UW Press, so, and not all that expensive, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, remember, I think
it's about $35, and people can obtain it from the Arboretum bookstore or from UW Press. Arboretum website is uwarboretum.org, and there's a place on there to contact the bookstore and purchase it.
And it's with 360 species, but many more photos and diagrams
right.
and pictures than 360 in there.
Yeah,
there's
several
for each one.
The book is designed to be for teaching, and so it's designed to let people understand why plants are in a certain plant family, like what's common about all the different milkweeds, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they all called milkweeds? And so each species has a flower photo, usually a leaf photo, and usually a seed photo, just to help people, and something whatever is diagnostic about telling which plant that is.
Yeah, it's a great combination there. Laura in La Crosse, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yes. 3 years ago, I converted a Timothy hay field to native prairie grass and wildflowers, and it's been blooming beautifully since then into dandelion, ragweed, burdock, and thistle. And I'm just wondering if there's anything I can do to get rid of that so that the black-eyed Susans and other pretty flowers can come through.
Are any coming through?
Well, it is full of black-eyed Susans, and last fall, those came up very nicely, and it was very beautiful, but only in August, September. And the spring now, it's just these annuals, the weeds that I'm seeing. And I've replanted it twice. It's on a hillside, and it's in La Crosse County.
Did you do anything to try and rid yourself of the weeds before you replanted?
I did. I killed it with Roundup, killed it again, and filled it with the native seeds, and have been hoping for some beautiful flowers. I mowed it last summer, and this summer, so far, I haven't done anything with it.
Okay.
Well, two of the species you mentioned, burdock and thistle, are not annuals but are perennials.
Okay.
And they are things that you do need to deal with because they'll be a perennial problem.
Yeah.
But 3 years is not too soon to worry about it not working at all.
All right.
Particularly if you were just seeing black-eyed Susans last year, they're some of the first things to show up. And the grasses in particular and many of the more conservative wildflowers take a long time to develop their roots.
Okay.
So if they're not flowering, that doesn't mean that they're not there. It just means that they're spending time developing extensive root systems. But
all right.
I would suggest dealing with the burdock and the thistle, depending
okay.
on how large the area is. Burdock can be pulled in the spring when just right after the leaves have come out and it's shrunk its root a little bit, or when it's flowering and it has shrunk its root, using up the energy in the root.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to pull up an acre of burdock. So,
yeah. About a half acre.
Yeah. So burdock and thistle can be dealt with with spot sprays. Mm-hmm. Thistles in particular are dealt with well in the fall.
Okay.
And a lot of these weedy species stay green longer than the native species, so you can even use Roundup on them again after the native species have gone dormant, or
okay.
before the native species green up in the spring. So that's something to watch very carefully. Also watching your mowing so that you time it before the weeds go to seed, because otherwise you're just spreading the seed around.
Yep. All right.
Some good.
Okay.
So don't lose hope yet.
Thank you.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for calling. Kelly in Duluth, Minnesota. Your turn. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. I was actually calling. We just moved into our house up north of Duluth about this time last year, and we had some lilacs that had grown out of control. So we cut them back, and I'm wondering if there was any native ground covers we could put. There's just bare dirt down there right now, and I wanted to plant something native underneath them that would pretty much stay green, you know, as long as possible until these things get flowering.
Okay. Well, lilacs are not native, but they're not a pest plant, so I don't usually worry about or encourage people to necessarily take them out. Okay. But they do; they will resprout with the kind of pruning that you've done. That's renewal pruning, and so they will come up. The native plants, I don't usually recommend ground covers. I recommend a mixture of ground layer species. And so up in Duluth area, you would be looking at ground covers like partridge berry and wintergreen and some of the really tiny little things that grow in, say, a pine woods or something like that might do well up there.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly. And let's go to Claire in Madison. Hi, Claire. Claire, are you there?
Hello.
Hello, Claire.
Hello. I had a question for Molly. We live next to a drainage area, which we have been trying to put into a prairie, and we do have mostly the same sorts of weeds that the earlier caller spoke about. But we do have one section which is crown vetch, and someone told me that it's very difficult to eliminate, but that we should try. And so I'd like to ask, is that true, and what could we do if we wanted to try to clear that out?
Okay.
It is true that you want to try to clear it out, and I'm not up to date on all the newest herbicides that would be specific to that. So I would suggest you go to a farm co-op or a garden store and ask them what's appropriate for crown vetch.
It isn't too big an area. Is there any way to do it without a herbicide?
Well, some ways that we like to get rid of weeds when we don't want to use herbicide are to smother them, and you can smother them with multiple layers of newspaper and wood chips, or you can smother them with black plastic, or landscaping cloth, which is degradable over time. And
long would you have to keep them covered?
Well, more than a growing season. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you're going to plant something into there, if you could plant right into the mulch or ground cover, you know, landscape fabric, after a while, after it's killed the species that you're trying to kill, and you can plant right into that mulch or landscaping cloth with plants. You can't do that with seed, though.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we will try it then.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join us as well at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller, Jim Packard, our producer, Molly Fifield-Murray, our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our topic on this edition of Garden Talk, landscaping with native plants. Molly Fifield-Murray, our guest from the UW-Madison Arboretum. Thanks for listening in, and give us a call if you have a question. Yvonne in Brown Deer is online, so let's go to Yvonne. Hi, Yvonne.
Good morning. I'm so glad you have this guest today. I am, this was an overwhelming spring. I have been planting native wildflowers for some years, and this year was spectacular. Was that because of those rains we had that probably had a lot of nitrogen in them?
Well, it might just be that your plants are finally maturing, and it's hard to tell. Wildflowers, we don't know as much about them as we would like, and some years they're spectacular and some years they aren't.
Well, my question was that this year the spring beauty was almost 6 inches tall when it's normally one or two.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have another question. In fact, I could go on for a half hour, but I won't. I have a Dutchman's pipe, which I sp- spotted at a garden center 5 or 6 years ago, and having read about it as a child, I had to have it. Well, it's growing, but it's not blooming, and I don't know if you have that at the Arboretum or not.
No, I'm sorry. It's not a species I'm familiar with.
Well, you know, it's listed. I have several books on wildflowers from various sources. A lot of them sound very authentic. And the John Declund, one of his books, I saw it listed in for this area. And that, it's rather a large area that he talks about. So I wasn't really sure if it would ever bloom here.
Do you have the scientific name for it?
It's Aristolochia, I think.
Aristolochia?
Uh-huh.
Well, there are a couple places that you could look it up to be sure that it is native and also get more information. One of them is the Wisconsin State Herbarium.
I got that list. I didn't find it yet.
Okay. Another one is the UW-Stevens Point Freckman Herbarium. And that's a really good choice for people who don't have any idea what their plant is.
Uh-huh.
The other one is the USDA website, which gives a lot of information about plants that aren't necessarily in Wisconsin, but you can look it up.
I'm computer failing.
Okay.
I'm working hard, but boy, is it frustrating.
Yeah.
Well, good luck.
The other question I had was on testing my own soil with the indicator paper for the pH.
Yes.
I understand that it may not be right.
Accurate, yeah.
Yeah, but that isn't necessarily what you're going to get with acidity anyway.
Well, I think if you really are interested in finding out about your soil, the best way to do it is go through the extension and send it to the soil testing lab. It's not that expensive, and it's they give you pretty thorough analysis.
Okay.
I don't worry about pH as much as some of the old wildflower books used to. There are some native plants that are very sensitive to pH, but most
right.
of them have pretty wide amplitudes.
Yeah. I had to dig up an area after some... fence had to be replaced, and boy, the mess that was made with putting in the rocks around the post to, you know, to that. Well, I ran into some beautiful clay. It's a kind of a beige color. It's not gray or blue. Now, my understanding is that's where there's a lot of the nutrients, and so I put it in a wheelbarrow, and I have a spouse who thinks I'm crazy when I do stuff like this. But I thought I would crumble it up as soon as it dries out a bit, because that's pretty heavy clay, and incorporate it into areas where I want a little more vitality.
Well, I don't usually recommend mixing soils because you can't mix them deeply enough for native plants who have fairly extensive root systems. So, All nutrients for the plants are in the soil except for that which the plants take out of the air, and clay does have nutrients in it, but it's really hard to amend the soil. I had a friend who was pulling up some shrubs, and he pulled up a shrub and it was still in the exact same shape it had been in 10 years ago before he'd planted it, because he had modified the soil in the hole so much that the roots didn't want to leave it. So it's best to try to create a planting bed that fits the typical kind of soil that plant would be in, and then let the plant spread its roots.
Good luck, and I certainly second the motion from Molly that you get some soil tests, and that'll really give you a lot of good information in your UW Extension office, your county office. They've got the information for you. And I think you can go online and get some information at the UW Extension website. So good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll take some more calls. By the way, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison, 263-1890. Rick in Madison. Hello.
Yes. My father was a member of the Civilian Conservation Corps back in the 30s. When they established the Arboretum. And I'm wondering if there is a way to determine, not how it looks, but what it was that perhaps was planted then as opposed to now. I'm thinking that over 60 years things have changed and things have grown up and so on and so forth. But yeah. Just kind of the, when we go out to visit, just to see some of the things that that were planted at that time. Can you make any comments on that?
Well, thank you for calling. The Civilian Conservation Corps was essential for the establishment of the Arboretum, which began in 1934. And I'd hate to say that there was anything good about the Depression, but the Civilian Conservation Corps had 200 men at the Arboretum, and without them, it wouldn't exist. Mm-hmm. They planted primarily Curtis Prairie,
okay.
Most of the pine trees that you see in the Arboretum, and most of the maples, beech and basswood in Wingra and Galistel Woods. Lots of people come to the Arboretum and think it's a natural place, but almost all of it is a restoration except for some of the wetlands. We do have some photographs down one of the hallways, and in fact, you might be able to find your father in one of those photographs because we do have a photograph that shows the whole camp worth of men. I'd love to talk to you if you come out sometime. You could make an appointment.
Okay.
When we had a reunion a few years ago, we talked to lots of the CCC boys, as they were called, and there are oral histories. I don't know if your dad came to that or not, but those are now at the Memorial Library being digitized, but we don't have access to them yet. But come on by. There's at least one barracks less. I think we have probably the most extensive remnant of Civilian Conservation Corps buildings in Wisconsin, certainly, and maybe in the Midwest. And it was the only CCC camp on a university campus. They worked directly with the professors, and you can still see places in Curtis Prairie where they worked, and we do have photographs both in our orientation film and, as I said, in one of the hallway exhibits. And you can even go online to the digital collection at the Memorial Library at the UW and find some of these old photos also.
Really, thanks for that point. So your office hours are, you know, regular business hours?
Yes, 9:30 to 4 during the week, and while I am there some weekends, not usually, so don't count on that.
All right. I'll call and make an appointment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for calling. That's a wonderful story. Dan and Viola, it's your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I love this topic. Thanks a lot for having it.
Sure.
I do quite a bit of prairie restoration in my free time, and an enemy I'm constantly battling is Rosa multiflora. And I heard a rumor not too long ago about a new disease, I don't know if it's a fungus or a virus, that they're trying to use to kill Rosa multiflora on a massive scale, and I don't know if you know anything about that, if your guest knows anything about that, or if it's just a rumor.
Well, that would be a good rumor, wouldn't it? I don't know about that particularly. The group to look for information like that would be the Invasive Plants of Wisconsin group, IPAW, and they're available through the DNR website, and they might have something. Although if it's current research and they don't have final results, they probably won't have anything posted yet.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And Barb in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Barb.
Good morning. I have two questions. First of all, I planted some. I'm trying to put a small prairie in the middle of my yard, and I have, a few years ago, I put in some woodland sunflower, who now think they own the place.
Yes.
How do I control them, or do I just have to dig them out?
Well, they are a little bit more of an aggressive species, and they will spread. So you can try digging them out or cutting them off and trying to reduce the spread of them. They're spreading by root system, not by seed so much. So you can try to reduce the root system. Anytime you have a clonal species that are spreading by roots, once you cut them, you might be stimulating more growth of the clone. So the time to cut them is when they're in flower. So pretend you want a bouquet of woodland sunflowers and cut them back rather extensively then, and that will weaken the clone and give the other things a chance.
Okay.
But many sunflowers are aggressive, and so plant them with care in a small area.
All right. The other question I have is, I have a very small woodland area, maybe 600 square feet, but I have a lot of elderberries in it, and it's underneath a mature basswood tree.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to put another native shrub in there, so it's fairly shady, and I'm wondering if you have any recommendation.
Well, one of my favorite native shrubs that grows in this shade is maple leaf viburnum. It's a little bit hard to find. There is a plant sale at the Arboretum tomorrow. Now, I know you're coming from Milwaukee. They may have a few left, but most of their shrub orders are pre-orders, so you might have to wait till next year. There are so many more nurseries in the state now than there used to that carry native plants. You might look for maple leaf viburnum. It stays quite short, so it's nice in a small house yard. Another plant that might do well in that much shade would be something called bladder nut, and it might do okay. But the maple basswood forest does not have an extensive shrub layer because of how much shade those species provide.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that something like a juneberry would work over there?
Well, juneberries, there are shrub-sized juneberries, but juneberries, if you want them to have berries, need at least partial sun. So that they have enough energy to produce the berries. And they are one of my favorite species because birds just love them.
Yeah.
In a few weeks, the catbirds, brown thrashers, grosbeaks, robins,
pretty much everybody.
Everybody's going, and robins are acting like flycatchers trying to go by. You know, there's this great big honking bird trying to get this delicate little berry. So they are a wonderful shrub or tree. They can grow at various sizes, but they do need some sun.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling, Barb. Appreciate it. Shireen in Springbrook, it's your turn now. Hi, Shireen.
Good morning.
Morning.
I would like to raise some Indian paintbrush, and I see it growing in the wild, and I know it doesn't transplant anyway, but what can I do to get it to grow? And I'm in zone 3, and I've got very sandy soil.
Well, it would like sandy soil, and you can look at some of the nursery catalogs or online to see if anybody has it. But one of the problems with Indian paintbrush is it's partially parasitic, and so it needs the soil that carries the critters in it, and it also needs the plants that it's parasitic on, which is usually oaks. So you could try some of the nurseries, but it's one of those native species that's a little bit harder to find.
Yes, they don't sell plants because they don't like to be handled and transplanted. But I can find seed, but their germination rate is so very low.
Well, that's true. The germination rate on many native species is low, particularly in a single year. They tend to be little time capsules and take multiple years to germinate. So that might be the best route, is to try some seeds and just be patient.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Shireen, for calling. Carol in Windsor, your turn now. Hi, Carol.
Good morning. I have a comment about the lady who called about the Dutchman's pipe.
Yeah.
If I've got the right plant in mind, it's something I saw when I lived in New York, and it's white and bends over and looks like an upside-down pipe. This, I believe, is a kind of fungus. It's a parasite and grows on rotted wood in the forest, but I'm not sure. That's what comes to mind when she mentioned it.
Well, that sounds like something I've heard called Indian pipe.
Indian pipe. That could be, too.
Yes. And it's not a fungus. It is a plant, but it's not a plant with chlorophyll. And so it is, as you say, getting its energy from rotting logs or rotting leaves. Dutchman pipe, if I remember correctly, is a viney kind of thing. And like I said, it's not a plant I'm particularly familiar with. But Indian pipe is a plant like you describe.
It's very interesting plant. It's
really neat. Yes.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much for calling. Yes. Bye, Carol. And Bob in Lancaster, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Oh, good morning. If one's going to try and plant some native, you know, red oak or white oak as a shade tree, ultimately to grow up and provide shade to the house, what's the absolute minimum distance from the foundation to the sapling?
Well, it's best to think of what the full growth of that plant is going to be, and what both red oaks and white oaks get quite large. One thing to consider when you're planting oaks is a disease called oak wilt, and the red oak is more susceptible to it. So generally, I would recommend people would plant a white oak or a bur oak, which are more resistant to oak wilt. So think of the mature size of an oak, which is quite large, and that's how far away to plant it.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of worrying about the root system. It's a matter of worrying about the branches eventually brushing the house or the roof line. Now, at where we live, we do have oaks around the house that overarch the house, but, of course, my husband's always eyeing those branches to see when he has to take them off so they don't land on the roof. So the best thing to do when you're planting, the number one mistake a young landscape architect makes is to crowd too many plants together, and the second one is to plant things too close to the house. So if you think that an oak is going to have a canopy that's 40 feet wide, plant it 20 feet from the house.
Yeah. A good 20 feet, probably.
Yeah, well, that's 40 feet is a minimum, you know, in our lifetime.
Yeah, in our lifetime. Good luck, Bob. Ron in Stoughton, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Yes. Question is, I'm going Mother's Day shopping, and I need to know if I'm supposed to buy a big present or a small present. And that'll lead into my question about my wife's been trying to grow this prairie for like 4 years, and she's never gotten it to the level where you can burn it. So what I've done and just chopped it down with the lawnmower as close to the ground as possible. And, well, then I took a beating for that. But anyways, I know the prairie plants have long, deep roots, and I don't know if my cutting grass as low as I could compensates for something we can't burn. So I need to know what kind of Mother's Day present I need to buy.
Well, I'm not sure I can help you with that part, but I can tell you that you don't want to cut it as low as you can. You want to, by the third year or so, you should be cutting it 6 or 8 inches, and just cutting when you see weeds, and cutting just before the weeds are going to seed. If you're cutting too low, you might be cutting too low and cutting off the growing points of some things, or just sort of inhibiting their long-term growth. And the other thing is, when you do mow, is to try to remove the plant material, unless you are going to try to burn it, in which you can leave it, and then use that for fuel.
Now, we've never gotten to the level where there's enough there to burn.
Okay.
But, you know, early spring, I mow it down because we can't burn, it doesn't burn. So, I guess I'm buying a big Mother's Day present.
Thanks for calling, Ron. Appreciate your call.
Well, and he could buy a big Mother's Day present at the Friends of the Arboretum plant sale tomorrow from 9 to 2.
And Ron's from Stoughton, not that far away.
Yeah, he could get up there.
What time is the sale again?
9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
9 a.m. to 2 p.m., Ron.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. That'd be a good gift. Great Mother's Day gift. Sandra in West Allis, your turn. Hi, Sandra.
I wanted some advice on replacing overgrown arborvitae that's about 6 feet tall in front of a porch on a very busy street with something native that the birds are happy in the arborvitae, but I think it has to go. I think it's in bad shape. So are there any suggestions?
And is this an area where you want to be able to look out?
Well, a little bit, but it's a half porch, so, you know, I can see out one side well without where there is no planting.
And what kind of soil is it?
I don't know that.
Okay, and what kind of shade conditions?
What kind of shade?
Yes.
There's one fairly new tree right on the street, but otherwise there's not much shade because it's I don't know what it is either. I thought it was going to be ginkgo, but it's something else they planted when they redid the street.
So it's fairly sunny?
Yes.
Okay. And were you looking for another conifer, or is some deciduous shrubbery okay?
Well, something I would prefer, something that stays green all year, yes.
Okay. Well, I don't have a solution for you then. if it needs to stay under 6 feet, there is a native juniper, Old Field juniper, and there's also one, Juniperus horizontalis, or low-growing juniper, that are native plants. The Old Field can get quite broad and maybe 3.5 to 4 feet high. The other one is the low juniper that you see in many kinds of plantings.
Uh-huh.
And those would both be appropriate for a sunny location like that. And you might want to mix them up. For instance, if you did plant some Old Field juniper, you might want to mix it up with something that also stays quite small, which is New Jersey tea. It gets about 3 feet, 3.5 feet tall and has white flowers in the middle of the summer that butterflies like quite a bit. And so that can tolerate that much sun.
Oh, okay.
Something taller would be, but not coniferous, would be something like hazelnut, which is, probably gets 6 feet tall and quite wide, has brilliant fall color, but once again is not evergreen.
Oh, okay. Could you mix like the juniper with the tea with the hazelnut? Like,
yes.
One of each?
Yes, that would be great.
Oh, okay. Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. And we finally have some open lines again, so you can join us with your question as we talk native plants with Molly Fifield-Murray of the UW Arboretum. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison, 263-1890. Mary in Sturgeon Bay, you are next. Hi, Mary.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
So I heard you talking before with somebody who wanted to kill out crown vetch, put down the newspapers. I know about doing that, but would that work with a small patch of garlic mustard? Put some magazines or newspapers over it. Would that smother it out?
Well, it might, although I would encourage cutting off anything that's flowering right now and putting that in a bag and then covering the young ones. Garlic mustard is a huge problem, as you know, and if people aren't aware of it, I've noticed it growing up and down the country road where I live because a neighbor had some logging done.
Yeah.
And it came in on the logging machinery, and now it's spreading very rapidly, and I'm sure some of my neighbors aren't aware of it. So a small patch of it, small patches you can pull if you're gentle and pull out the whole root system. And you can try smothering, but if it's in flower now, get it out of there so you can get the seeds out.
Okay, but then if you, I see, and then try smothering it, but again, the seeds are viable for several years, but by smothering it now, you would, I suppose, it would eliminate that then. You wouldn't have to worry about them coming up again.
Well, you might try smothering it with either black plastic or clear plastic and see if you can bake that soil and fry those seeds. I don't know that anybody has done that, so you'd be doing your own little experiment on it.
I see. Okay, well, better than putting Roundup on it. But Roundup otherwise should eliminate it also after you cut it off?
Well, but it doesn't eliminate the seeds.
Seeds, no.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Molly Fifield-Murray, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking landscaping with native plants today with our guest, Molly Fifield-Murray of the UW-Madison Arboretum. Denise in the town of Lisbon is next. Hi, Denise.
Hello. I have two questions. One, what would be a good ground cover under white pines that are dropping their needles? And usually we just let the needles stay because it just kills the grass under it anyway.
Well, remind me where New Lisbon is.
The town of Lisbon, we are in the center, kind of south central.
So sandy soil?
No, more clay.
More clay. Okay. And is there pine woods near you that you like to visit?
Well, I think Old World, Wisconsin has a pine, or Lapham Peak.
Okay. So one way I suggest that people find out what they want to plant at their site is to go visit a natural site with a similar conditions
in the area.
In the area, the close by. And then you can see what's growing there and plant something similar. But, similar things like wild ginger and the blue phlox and some of the other things that grow under maples and things also grow under pines in that part of the state, not so much farther up north. But I would highly recommend you go to a native stand near you and see what's there and see how you want to plant them. It also shows you how they grow instead of planting everything in rows, you can see that one kind of species grows in a clump and another kind of species is sort of spotted around. The one thing that wouldn't work under pines that does work under maples are the spring ephemerals, which need spring sunlight. So you can't go to a maple forest to see what to put in a pine forest because, of course, pines do have shade in the spring.
Okay.
All right.
The other question I have is about my established prairie garden. Suffering from creeping Charlie, lawn grass, and garlic mustard now. We do burn every third year, but we missed it this spring because the plants started coming up before we had a dry spell.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, this was a hard spring for burning, although prairie plants can be burned even after they've started coming up.
Oh, that was my question.
And I have burned as late as Memorial Day and had the grass shoulder height by the 4th of July, just so that you know that the prairie is adapted to that. It is getting quite dry in our part of the state. I don't know about your part of the state, and I know that certain parts of the state already have fire restrictions.
Okay.
So anybody listening in certain parts of the state need to check with what's going on in their county as far as fire control measures.
And do you think those three species would the burning would do it, or should I get out there, especially with the garlic mustard? That's what's really bothering me. That's come up quite nasty in there.
Yes, yeah, so I certainly would take off anything that's flowering and put it in a bag and mark it. And I don't know if you have trash pickup or whatever, but in our area anyway, you mark it that it's garlic mustard, and then they deal with it somewhat differently.
Okay.
But anything flowering, any garlic mustard flowering, I would get out of there right away.
Okay.
And then I do have heard that burning is a useful tool at, and I don't know that burning now that it's so mature would deal with this year's plants, but it would, if you burned in the fall, for instance, you would deal with next year's plants.
Okay.
All right.
We'll try for that. Thank you.
Thanks, Denise. And Betty in Dubuque, Iowa, your turn. Hi, Betty.
Good afternoon. I'm unloading groceries at home, and I happen to tune into your station. And I don't know if this question will apply to the topic you're covering today, but we have a huge problem last year with a pincher-type bug, with pinchers on the front of the bug, and we have huge stand-up flower pots. Well, actually, they're long flower beds, and we put petunias in them every year, and the pincher bugs got in there last year, and they just devastated them. You know, they get at the roots of them. Are you familiar with this bug and how we can control this before we plant our flowers tomorrow?
Well, no, I'm not. I'm sorry, but this is another one of those things that it's really a good resource are the master gardeners in your area and or county extension. If you don't have master gardeners right around there, but I imagine you do, and they might be able to help you. Otherwise, I might suggest if these are in pots that you could remove the soil and put in fresh soil, you might help get rid of whatever's been in there.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Margaret in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Margaret.
Hey. I have about a 3/4 acre lot, and it's mostly wooded. And the previous owner bought all kinds of what they thought were very nice plants, but they tended to be very invasive, like, goutweed. And what else did she plant? English ivy. And I have buckthorn from years ago. But mostly what I have a lot of is Creeping Charlie, and it has kind of taken over both lawns. Not that I have a whole lot of grass because of all the shade. So, and I have also Virginia Creeper in the backyard. I do have garlic mustard, but I'm starting to get a handle on that. But I just happen to have a lot of invasive species, but they're mixed in with a lot of the nice native woodland flowers that I have. Like I have bloodroot, and I discovered an anemone this spring. And so how do I deal with getting rid of or trying to control the invasive species without disturbing the
rest of it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you don't have to go to the gym for any workouts.
No.
Well, I don't know. Actually, I should go to the gym to get ready so I could handle it.
Well, my favorite tool is one of those three-pronged fork kind of things that help you get at the roots of things like Creeping Charlie and quackgrass, because all of these rhizomata species, you have to get the root systems. And that also helps you separate out in between something like bloodroot is not be hard to pull the Creeping Charlie out from in between it.
Right.
If you had something like prairie phlox, which is also rhizomatous to some degree, then it's a little bit harder to separate everything. But unless you're going to take a little artist brush and paint the leaves with an herbicide.
I have way too much Creeping Charlie for
that. Yeah. You're just going to have to keep at it, and sorry, you'll have to be outside in the midst of your flowers pulling those things.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And it is, I've mentioned this on the program before, but it is amazing how much you can pull. You sit down for an hour. You can make, and we do this on the lawn and around the edges of the flowers and so forth for Creeping Charlie. It's amazing how much you can get out of there, and it slows it down.
Yeah, it's hard to get rid of, but and I don't know the history of that plant. Some of these invasive species were brought over for specific reasons. Dandelions, obviously, were brought over for their medicinal and health purposes, and so people really valued them. 200 and 300 years ago, we've sort of lost that value to them. But I don't know the history of Creeping Charlie, so I can't tell them to put it in a salad or something.
Let's go to Vern in Appleton next. Hi, Vern.
Good morning.
Morning.
How's everything with you folks?
Great, thank
you. Just great.
So, I have some violets that I found in my yard. Now, 2 years ago, I believe it was, I found one little yellow violet. So I dug it out and I planted it. Well, now I've got a few plants of that. And I have real deep purple violets. And this year I found some white violets. Are those unusual?
Well, the yellow violet is a woodland violet. It's a specific species. And it's most common in oak or even maple woodlands. The purple and the white violet could be both common violet, but there also are some white violets that are particular species. Now, you could go to, for instance, the Freckman Herbarium website and look under violet, or the Madison Herbarium website and look under violets and see how they'll tell the difference. There are many, many species of violets, and some of them are a little bit hard to tell apart, but there are the white ones, there are different blue ones, and the way to tell them apart is how far the flower is above the leaves and some things like that.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, the white ones I found growing by the gas tank in the yard, you know, the propane.
Yeah.
And it's in quite a bit of shade. Now, I don't have any oaks around, but I live in a trailer park. And we have maples here. And I was just thrilled to find that one little yellow one 2 years ago, I believe it was.
Yes.
And now I've dug them up and put them in plants on my deck. I'm putting them in planters, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
They're beautiful little flowers.
They are. They're very nice.
And I was so happy to see. See, I have another plant growing there, a little flower, and it looks like a violet. It has nothing like the leaves of a violet. It's shaped like a violet. It's a little bigger, and the bloom is. Has the stripes in the center, bigger petals on top, smaller on the bottom. And I have no idea what it is.
What do the leaves look like?
Oh, golly. They're narrow, very small. And they grow like on a stalk, I believe, instead of on a stem like a violet.
Well, there is a violet that has very narrow leaves, two of them, in fact. One is called prairie violet and one is called bird's foot violet, but they like sun, and they are native species. And so it's possible that what you're talking about is a violet, mm-hmm. but there are many flowers that are sort of bilaterally shaped like violets, and so it might not be that. So mm-hmm. one thing to do is to look up bird's foot or prairie violet and see if it is indeed a violet.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Molly Fifield-Murray, our guest today, who directs outreach and education programs for the UW-Madison Arboretum. She'll be with us till 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Zeroing in on landscaping with native plants today with our guest, Molly Fifield-Murray, Director of Outreach and Education Programs for the UW-Madison Arboretum. I'm Larry Mueller. Happy to have you join us. Lots of callers online, so we'll go right back to our phones and to Sarah in Stoughton. Sarah, hello.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually have two questions. I have one that's a little more specific. I actually work as a camp gardener over the summer, and I have an herb garden that I use with the children that come to camp, and I really want to have mint, but I know just how vigorous it is, and so I was hoping that I could find something that I could plant away from the regular garden that I could give enough room to expand and grow, and I didn't know if there were any really strong native mints. More particularly, the place I want to put it is rather shady, so that would make a difference.
Okay, well, one thing that comes to mind is bergamot, or it has various other names. Monarda is its genus name, and it can tolerate partial shade at least. And you might be familiar with it. The European version is used in Earl Grey tea. But it can tolerate partial shade. There are some woodland mints, but you might also think of the other more partially shady mint that I can think of is a mint that grows in prairies. So I would suggest the Monarda as perhaps the most interesting one, and one that would be easy for you to get.
Okay.
All right. You had another question, Sarah?
Yes. I also wanted to talk a little about prairie burning. We have rather expensive prairie grounds at the camp, although because it's used as an almost full-year camp, it's hard for us to get a chance when it has been good weather for it and when there aren't people using the campgrounds to find time for burning. And I didn't know if there were alternatives to burning in prairies to keep them really healthy.
Well, the alternative is to cut it and remove the material that you cut. So if it's a large area, finding somebody with sort of like a hay wagon chopper kind of situation, sometimes called a flail mower, and removing the material. Otherwise, if it's a small area, you can cut it with like a weed whip or something and then rake the material off. The concept of burning, two things happen with burning. One is you remove the standing dead vegetation, and the other thing is you, of course, blacken the soil somewhat. And thirdly, non-native species are usually not adapted to fire, and so fire has that advantage. Burning can take care of removing the standing dead material. It doesn't take care of the other two problems.
Okay. And then is there a time that that's like sort of the earliest that you can burn a prairie?
You can burn a prairie any time that there's no snow cover. That's called dormant season burning. So you could even burn in January if there's no snow cover, as long as your water source that you're using to control the fire isn't going to freeze up.
Oh, all right.
So anytime that it's dormant, you can burn it. And some people even burn prairies during the growing season, as I mentioned earlier, if they're trying to control a certain weed. Natural prairie fires might have occurred in any month. As I said, right now it's very dry. In the prior to fire prevention and farming, lightning strike in a dry summer would start a fire in June and burn a prairie, and the prairie would recover. But that's when camp's probably pretty busy, so you might look for January or March.
Thanks, Sarah.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Ann in Milwaukee, your turn.
Hi. My lilac tree in the back, it's losing its bark, and I don't put any poison in the yard at all, and I don't know what to do for it. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, lilacs are not a native species, so I'm not an expert, but I do know that you need to renew prune lilacs by taking out the oldest stems clear to the ground, and you can take out as many as a third of them in a year, and then they will come up from the roots with new young stems. And if the old stems you're taking out seem to be diseased or something, you know, be sure to get them away from the existing young stems that are coming up.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you for calling. And Jim in Germantown, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I have an oak tree that I planted about 3 years ago. And the first year and a half, it seemed to grow like wild. And then all of a sudden, toward the end of last year, the lower limbs didn't have any leaves on them. And this year, the only limbs that are leafing out are at the very top of the tree.
Well, there are a number of diseases that affect oaks, and one thing you can do is to take one of the limbs, if it seems to be diseased, and get it to the plant disease laboratory, and you can do that through extension, and have them analyze it. But sometimes the problems you see with newly planted species are with how they were planted, and sometimes trees especially sometimes get planted too deep, and then they sort of smother over time, or their roots are not properly laid out in the hole, and they smother over time, or they're in heavy clay soil, and people diligently water them to death. So
it is heavy clay soil, that I'll say.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I once had a client who said, I don't know what's wrong with this tree. I keep watering it, and it's just not thriving. And what he was doing was drowning it, basically. So I'm not saying that you've done that, but a lot when you have a young tree that's not thriving frequently, it's the planting of it that has been the problem.
And it usually takes about 4 to 5 years.
Yeah. Well, and it can even take longer. You know, there was a lot of cities were having troubles with their maples dying, and it turned out that when they were planted, instead of straightening out the roots, they curled them to fit into a small hole.
Oh, man.
And the root continued to grow in a circle and eventually strangled the tree. Yeah.
I know that you have to make the hole twice as big as the container at least.
Right.
And spread then, those roots.
And then spread the roots out and all this, and I've done that.
Okay.
I even supplemented the soil and everything when I first planted it. It may be that the watering is an issue because it's in the middle of a flower garden.
Okay.
But it's all, and it's mulched, so it doesn't dry out very fast. Mm-hmm. But I only water usually in the summer, even only once a week.
Okay, but oaks do have a taproot, and sometimes they can have a problem with rotting. Depending on the situation. And many oaks don't like heavy clay soil. So if it's really heavy clay, it just might be a problem with the site.
That could be, because I know my neighbor, he tried planting oaks, and he lost 3 oaks in a row.
Yeah.
And this is the first time I planted an oak. I've had maples, many of them in my yard, but I thought we'd try something different.
Right.
Not doing well.
Well, let's see. You're in the eastern part of the state, correct?
Correct. Northwest of Milwaukee.
Yeah, basswood or beech might be a better alternative than the oak.
Oh, okay.
All right, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. And Jean in Madison, your turn. Hi, Jean.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask about wild ginger. Is this considered an invasive species here in Madison?
No, not wild ginger.
Well, maybe that isn't exactly what it is, but someone told me that's what it is. It looks a little bit like enormous violets or water lilies in the ground. And I saw a little patch of it in the corner of the yard and thought, oh, well, that's nice. And then the next year, it had just taken over completely, and now it's just covering the whole back part of the yard going into the lilies, and it's very hard to pull out. It smells a bit like ginger when I pull it up, but it has sort of fibrous roots, and oh my, I'm trying to figure out how to get rid of this. It's almost as bad as Creeping Charlie.
What does the flower look like?
Well, I'm not sure it has a flower. It has some sort of a little red thing down underneath that may be a flower.
Well, yes, that does sound like wild ginger. If you want to be sure, come on over to the Arboretum. We have 4 acres of native gardens right around the visitor center. And you can look up some of these native species and see what you have. Wild ginger does spread, but it's not considered a horribly aggressive species. So,
do you have any idea what this might be?
Well, it does sound like wild ginger because it does. If it has a heart-shaped leaf that's maybe an inch off the ground with a little red flower underneath,
that's
sounds
right.
like wild ginger.
It sure does.
And it smells a bit like ginger when I pull it out, but it's certainly taking over. I mean, it's kind of pretty, but I don't know how to have a little bit of it without it just taking over the whole yard.
Well, you can dig it up and share it with friends. In fact, you know, the Friends of the Arboretum accept donations to their plant sale. It's too late for this year, but next year you could certainly do that.
Oh, I'd be glad to get rid of it.
See, lots of people like to have it, and I've had it at my place, and I wouldn't say that it has spread so vigorously that I'm worried about it.
Oh, I just don't understand this. It's like all over the back of the yard.
You must have ideal growing conditions.
Yes.
Maybe I do. Well, anyway, that's interesting.
You might want to try planting a few other species in there. Plant some ferns and some things that might compete with it a little bit.
Oh, okay. Or like lilies, daylilies?
Well, I would...
It seems to be crowding those all out.
Daylilies aren't native, and they like some sunlight, so I wouldn't think they would be in the same kind of situation. But, you know, if you tried some ferns, Jack in the Pulpit, something that would come up through that ginger and provide some diversity for you, even things like bellwort and bloodroot, you'd have a very nice planting then.
Well, that sounds nice, yes. Mm-mm. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. You know, Molly, about maybe a half hour, 45 minutes ago, someone, you were talking to a woman and mentioned a bush that attracts birds. And it's totally flown from my brain. Okay. And do you remember that?
Well, she was talking about amelanchiers or Juneberries or serviceberries or shadbush. They're all the common name for the amelanchier species.
And so those are somebody called in and wondered what the name was for those bushes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we also got an email from Darcy about Dutchman's pipe. She had an old wildflower guide from 1948, and it listed it, and it says a pipe vine. It's also known as the pipe vine, and it's a high twining vine within a range of Midland states and the Appalachians. Habitat is wooded rocky slopes and moderately acid soil. Well known in cultivation and often called Dutchman's pipe in reference to a shape of the calyx.
Yeah, so, the flower.
The flower.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's in the same family as wild ginger. So there we go.
Yeah, but not native to Wisconsin.
But not native to Wisconsin. So there you have it about Dutchman's pipe. Sarah in Lake Geneva, it's your turn. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
actually have a Dutchman's pipe, as you're just talking about that. We have not been successful every couple years. It seems to have some seed pods, but we haven't been successful in cultivating or passing it on to friends, even through seed pods and cuttings. So I'm not sure how to pass it on, but it's wonderful. It twines around the deck, and we had to trim it way back when we painted, and it's just fine.
Came right back.
Yep. So that's one thing. I want to know, and I don't know if you covered this earlier, but what's the best process for eradicating garlic mustard and then disposal as well?
Mm-hmm. Well, the two methods that are highly recommended, and you can go on the DNR website and see this, or there's a book called The Invasive Plants of the Midwest that's quite helpful. But the two methods used most frequently are pulling it, and using herbicides, and the herbicides used are either Roundup or Garlon 3, and Garlon 3 comes in a variety of brand names, so that's not the only brand name to use, and I can't remember the scientific name of it. It is a huge threat to our woodlands, so right now, everybody should go out this afternoon and cut off any garlic mustard plants they see flowering, pull them. If you can't pull them, at least cut them off so the seed doesn't go around. Okay. And then disposal, put them in plastic bags. Don't just leave them on the ground because the fruits after ripen, even after you've cut them off or pulled them up.
Okay, and when we're pulling, is it important that we dig down and get the root system out?
Yes.
Okay. And this is the best time of year to be getting it?
Yes.
Especially with the flowers.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for that. My other question is, I'm looking for a ground cover that thrives but isn't overly invasive. A little bit sandy soil and fairly dry because it's up away from the hose and all of that and mostly sunny.
Well, I don't recommend ground covers. I recommend plant communities. And
okay.
So if it's dry and it's fairly sunny, that sounds like a prairie to me. And if you want it to be a low-growing prairie, there are numerous prairie plants that stay very low and are suitable for the home landscape, starting with some grasses which are essential in a prairie, such as prairie drop seed and little blue stem and side oats grama grass, June grass. They are all thrive in dry conditions. And then you can look at any of the native nursery catalogs and just look for plants that are a certain height that bloom throughout the year. You know, at the Arboretum, we have 14 native prairie species coming in to bloom every week. So you can plant
beautiful.
A very diverse area back there. You plant up to about 30 species and you'll have a show going on all summer.
Okay, great. And would that work well with the lilacs that are there?
Well, the lilacs would be providing some shade. Like I said earlier, lilacs are not a threat to the prairie or to our woodland ecosystems. They aren't native, but they don't spread by seed. But they do spread by suckers, and so you do need to cut out some of the stems.
Okay, great.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Sarah, for calling. Appreciate your call as well. And Jane in Madison, I think it's your turn. Hi, Jane.
Yeah, hi. I have a couple questions. My first one is about an invasive campanula that's it's taking over flower beds in woodland area. And I don't know if you're familiar with it. In the fall, it has like a bellflower. A stem with, you know, looks like bell flowers.
Yes.
And it's got these big, huge white roots.
I don't know about an invasive campanula. There are a number of native campanula. One is Campanula americana, which is a taller one, and then there's Campanula rotundifolia, which is a tiny little harebell kind of thing. So once again, if you do think it's an invasive species, I would recommend either looking in the book Invasive Species of the Midwest or looking on the DNR website for...
Yeah, no, I can't find it. And somebody told me that it was a type of campanula. And
okay.
Maybe it's just taking over because it's more aggressive than other things.
Well, sometimes plants that would behave themselves in a natural community, if they don't have the competition from other things of the community, can sort of take over a situation.
Right. So they have these big white root systems, and they spread through the roots. And when I dig it up, I'm also wondering, if you leave some of the root hairs, do they grow into a plant?
Well, I don't know whether root hairs would, but certainly the main part of the root, if it's a rhizomatous species, if it's the rhizome, that will regenerate.
Okay, so if you leave the stringier part, it's not going to resprout?
Well, I can't guarantee that. So.
All right. What about little violet sprouts coming up? And somebody said, you know, you just cut them off. Well, they just kind of pull out. And if you leave them there in the dirt, will they re-sprout?
Anytime you have roots that are back in contact with the soil, there's a chance for that plant to re-root.
Oh, all right. Okay. And do you think corn gluten would work on garlic mustard seeds?
Well, I don't know. They're just experimenting with things like that, and I haven't seen any literature on that.
Hmm. And do you think, is it too late to transplant arborvitae?
Well, probably not too late. It depends on whether you prepared the root system for transplanting.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. You're experimenting with some wildflower lawns, are you not?
Yes. We have 4 acres of new gardens that represent what's on the 1,200 acres of the arboretum, so people don't have to walk so far. And the wildflower lawn hasn't been planted yet, but it's going to be a number of sedges. Like there's a sedge called Juncus tenuus, which loves to grow in paths. Hmm. And then little plants like yellow star grass and blue-eyed grass that only get a few inches tall. And even some of the violets. And, you know, but some people hate seeing violets in their lawn, mm-hmm. and I happen to like them. But
I like
anyway,
violets. Yeah.
This is going to be an experiment to some degree of a flowering lawn, and it will be right near the visitor center, but it hasn't been planted yet, so they can't come and see it this year.
But we can come and see lots of things at the Arboretum. And in fact, when is the plant sale again?
Plant sale is tomorrow from 9 to 2, and people can walk around and see the other gardens that have been planted. There's Maple Basswood Forest Garden and 4 different kinds of prairie gardens and some wetlands, rain gardens. So, and we didn't even get to talk about rain gardens today, so that's a whole other way to plant natives.
Well, I'll tell you what, tomorrow would be a perfect day to get over to the Arboretum because the lilacs are blooming, and I can tell you again, the fragrance is just unbelievable at the UW-Madison Arboretum. It's lovely. Molly, it's always a pleasure.
Yep, it's been great. And I might say, if they can come during the week, it would be less crowded.
Yes. See, we're going tonight. and Saturday and Sunday is going to be busy there, but it'll still be fun. Molly Fifield-Murray directs outreach and education programs for the UW-Madison Arboretum. And it's the Arboretum extension of the UW-Madison, used by students and researchers focusing on ecological restoration. But the public is welcome, and so you and I can go out there and take a look and have a great time. And just to let you know, coming up on Monday, Bill and Lori will be along to offer some advice for us weekend warriors and with their sports injuries. So we'll look forward to that. And certainly look forward to another Garden Talk next Friday. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.